you notice the lusciousness of the air, sunshine, the flowers. Mm-hmm. The one you see the butterfly. Mm-hmm.
He's all sick.
Can't have a garden.
The birds. What's going on? Flowers and the bees, and you heard the birds. It's all calling us to the same thing. Will we participate? The universe is alive with this love and this reality and this beauty and this sensuousness. Sensuousness is at the core of the universe. How devastating that we in the West have denied it. It is calling us to wholeness, it's calling us to completeness, it's calling us to its own, he says it, a wine meant to be enjoyed. Do you know what spiritual love is? Have you enjoyed spiritual love? We might talk about it in academic terms, but it can only be experienced in sensuous terms. It can only be experienced as we enjoy it, as we love it, as we embrace it, as we give ourselves to it. It's meant to be participated in. If we stand back talking about it, we'll never know its goodness, its beauty, its voluptuousness. Meister Eckhart says, God is voluptuous. It's not an academic statement. We have to participate. The universe has been calling us forever. We can't help but mention in the West, how do we define sex? Sex purpose is what? It's utilitarian. That's as good as we can get. Deny the sensuousness of it. If you read this text, what is sex for? It's for love. It's for embracing. It's for bringing opposites together. It's to integrate into the whole. It's for beauty. And he says it's for enjoyment. It's for enjoyment. We're to participate. And it's meant to be enjoyed. Listen to 59.
Which one was that you were referring? I was so caught up with 60. I did not hear what Anna
was. That's 61. 59. Is it not important that those in whom the fullness has come to dwell completely understand themselves? Those who do not know themselves will never enjoy what they possess. Do we know what that fullness means? Do we experience the fullness of being a fully realized human being? Fully realized. It's meant to be enjoyed. To be reveled in. To be relished.
I think Walt Whitman must have read Philip.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Meant to be enjoyed. Those, however, who do not come to understand who they are, will they enjoy what they have?
I don't know why you guys think you have to read Philip to know that.
Wait 5 decades.
That's the whole point.
How old
are
you?
No, I'm not going to do it.
Will we never say it from the pulpit? And it's time we say it out loud. This is what the universe is about. And it's what this work is about. It's meant to be enjoyed. He goes on and talks about those who stand together and enjoy this spiritual love. Do we know what that is? Can we enjoy the company of that deep love that's given among community? It's the fulfillment of all desires. That's what it's bringing us to. It's what it's about. The universe is sensual. Those who know themselves will enjoy what they have. It's fulfillment at last. It's sensual. In 58, the embrace of opposites occurs in this world, masculine, feminine, strength, weakness. In the great age, the Ion, something similar to what we call embrace occurs as well. But though we use the same name for it, forms of union there transcend what can be described here. For in that place there exists that which is stronger than the greatest force, and those who are superior to all force. There's being and there's non-being, but reality is one and whole. But still, it's not able to enter anyone who only has a heart of flesh. Why can't it enter someone who doesn't have a heart of flesh?
Say that again.
Why can't it enter anyone who doesn't have a heart of flesh?
They're stuck in their head.
Right. It waits. Sensuousness waits. It waits for us to say yes. It waits for us to be eager. It waits for our hunger. It waits for our openness. It waits for our receptivity. As long as we stand back, analyzing, talking about it, we'll never experience it. It's waiting. The universe is waiting out there. The flowers are waiting out there for the bees. The universe is waiting for our participation. We can't stand back. It's the fullness. It's the fullness. Spiritual love is the embrace of opposites. But he says it can't really be described in the spiritual realm. What happens in the embrace of opposites? at this work that he's speaking of. What's going on?
The whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
Absolutely. Absolutely it is. And there's the integration of the two. The masculine is no longer masculine. The feminine is no longer feminine. The two are becoming one. There's an integration of being, and the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. We are creating something whole. We're creating something that was the longing from the beginning of the universe. Listen to 4. The Anointed One has come, and in coming some he ransoms, others he releases and restores, and there are those whom he rescues. He ransomed strangers and made them his own. Those who came to him he restored. All this he gave as a self-offering out of his own love and desire. There it is again.
That was 54?
4.
Number 4.
4.
Not only did he willingly give himself at his appearing, but from the very beginning of the cosmos, it was his longing to do so. It's at the core of the inception of the manifested realm. And so now, in this way, he comes to receive back what he has always loved. Releasing all who are held captive by thieves of the soul, redeeming everything in the cosmos, both good and evil. Everything is brought to wholeness, everything restored. That's the vision. Everywhere we're being enticed to participate. We long to participate. What holds us back? What prevents it? What prevents it in you? What prevents it in me? We have to ask ourselves why we hold back. We've just heard the reason for the universe. It's love. Love is always calling to the other, always entreating the other, always enticing the other, always seeking to embrace the other and include the other. There is no duality unless we hold back, unless we stand back, unless we don't participate.
Enlightenment is the ego's ultimate disappointment.
Say more about that.
Well, we can't really truly experience this unless we can, in a sense, subjugate the ego. Yeah. As long as the ego is in control or thinks it's in control, we are not free.
Yes. By the very nature of when you use the word ego, what we're referring to, of course, is that separate sense of self. A separate sense of self. What it really longs for is something other than that. But it holds back trying to get those things, trying to grasp those things. We've heard the journey today. We've heard the journey. We've seen the journey from the beginning. God is out there. We've tasted it today in the sensuousness of the environment. Nature presents it all the time. The beauty, the voraciousness, the lushness, the verdancy. And now we've heard it in our texts. Philip presents it to us. The presentation to come, presentation to be involved, the presentation not to hold back, but to surrender the small self, to embrace that full feeling self, the full self, the real self. We don't know what real self is until we have experienced the new self. Listen to Rumi. Oh God, let all lovers be content. Give them happy endings. Let their lives be celebrations. Let their hearts dance in the fire of your love. Oh, my beloved, you have aroused my passions. Your touch has filled me with desire. I'm no longer separate from you. These are precious moments. I beseech you, don't let me wait. Let me merge with you. That's what our work is all about. Okay, what's going on over there?
He's misbehaving.
Tending the flock. It's spring.
Reverting to her hippie days.
Oh, and it's her anniversary.
Yeah.
TMI.
Ching, hold fast to the energy of the One. It will unify the body and merge it with spirit. It will cleanse the vision and reveal the world as flawless. It will focus the life force and make one supple as a newborn. As you love the people, can you be free of self-interest? As the gates of heaven open and close, can you remain steadfast as a mother bird who sits with her nest? As your wisdom reaches the four corners of the world, can you keep the innocence of a beginner? Know this primal energy that guides without forcing, that serves without seeking, that brings forth and sustains life, yet does not possess or own it. One who holds this energy brings Tao to this very earth. Tao can triumph over a raging fire or the freeze of winter weather. Yet when it comes to rule the world, it's with the gentleness of a feather. This is the vision, isn't it? The vision of a world brought forth into wholeness, into completeness, into fullness, humanity in right relationship with one another, enjoying the earth, enjoying each other, enjoying this moment. Enjoying this moment in time and history, enjoying our participation. Because as we enter in, we bring into fulfillment all creation, the whole cosmic order is brought back into right relationship. That's the invitation that's before us. Invite you to a process, if you want to, this evening, after all the festivities, and before you go to bed. We have been talking about the universe being iconic. It's meant to be seen as a calling us in, calling us to participate, calling us to marriage. And Philip sees everything as iconic. The words we speak are iconic, calling us into participation. The universe is iconic. The manifested realm is iconic. Our bodies are iconic. So there is a spiritual exercise. I mentioned to you Jewish mysticism, that the divine wrote black fire upon white fire. And if we're to know true knowledge, we have to learn to read the white fire. We have to get beyond the black fire. So we're invited into the text itself, behind the words, into the living energy that produced it. So what I'm inviting you to do tonight is, when we go to our rooms after everything is over, go into our rooms in silence. And there I'm going to, some of you will see echoes of Lectio Divina in this. This is actually, I'm taking it from a text that precedes Lectio Divina in the West, the Ladder of Monks. And I want to look at this together. There is another exercise that we could take, and that would be to spend time with the natural world as iconic, learning to, as Philip says, read the icon. And I invite you into participation with the natural world. I invite you to sit with a living entity, sit with a tree, sit with a bush, sit with a flower. Can we read it? Can we experience its isness, its core, its heart, its divine face? It's all manifesting. It's all speaking that divine. So, from the Ladder of Monks, there's four aspects to it, and it echoes the four aspects of our own consciousness, our own conscious participation. We have all aspects of ourselves. Reading is the careful study of the scriptures with the concentration of the mind. We start with our heads, with our eyes, with the black fire. One enters into the temple, into a prayerful space. And then meditation is the concentration of the mind with an open heart, seeking knowledge of hidden truth, led by one's own imaginal creative realm. What do you hear here? Led by one's own imaginal creative realm.
The crafting of our own intentions.
Bring your volition to it. Participate in it. What does your heart imagine? What does your creative self feel is emanating behind those words? What's being manifested? Play with it. Yes?
When you ask that question, I was thinking that if we each bring our own imaginal mind to this,
yes,
there is no limitation of right or wrong, because whatever we bring is uniquely our experience.
Absolutely, and it uniquely expresses the uniqueness that you are. That aspect of God, that facet of God that each of us are. We could bring 25 different viewpoints, 25 different insights into this. And then the second thing is, we enter in prayer. Prayer is the turning of the devout heart toward God in order to remove all barriers and blocks and obtain what is true. It's a kenotic experience. And it's the descending from the head into the heart. And then one enters into the Holy of Holies in contemplation. Outside of the discursive mind, contemplation is a certain elevation of consciousness suspended above the mind, tasting the joys of the eternal. So, reading seeks the sweetness of the blessed life. Meditation finds it. Prayer asks for it, prepares for it. Contemplation tastes it. I'm quoting. So here's the exercise I'm inviting us to participate in. Before bedtime, prepare yourself. I just said 15 minutes, time is not relevant. Be relaxed, attentive, silent, divested of all distractions, self-focused. Read, and I'm asking you to take analog 70 and read through it carefully. Read it attentively. Read it as repeatedly as necessary until the text seems clear, speaking directly to you. Let it speak to you, whatever grabs you, whatever you hear. Don't get lost in the metaphors, it's full of metaphors, but rather let the metaphors present themselves to you. Wait for the metaphors to present themselves. Wait for the metaphors to open to you. And here I say, descend into the noose. This is work for the noose. Begin to meditate upon the text using your imagination, using your creative mind. Creative mind is not the head, it's the heart, creative source. What do you see? What do you hear? What is being unpackaged for you? What is being said? You're invited to do any journaling at that point if you wish. Letting your thoughts and insights emerge just as they do at that point. Don't force anything, just see what's emerging for you. Write what you sense. And here we work with the felt sense. The felt sense, the deeper sense. But also maybe what you don't understand. What is questions are arising. Be as thorough as you want to at that point, then let it go. When finished meditating, just prayerfully read the text once more. Deeply and prayerfully set it aside and go to bed. But go to bed with it. Let the text rest within you. Just enter into it. Take it to bed with you. Be open to the working of the Spirit within you as it kind of does its work through the night. Here you'll begin to pass the confines of the mind, resting simply in simple spirit. And I just put a little caution during the night. Be prepared. You might receive more insight. Might receive more understanding. Rest in simple repose. So then the last thing I suggest is in the morning upon awakening, you might read the text once more, but not with your mind. Simply read it with the heart and then stay in that heart space. You don't need to do anything with it. Something might emerge there above the mind, above words, above understanding, in the quiet, still presence of the morning, where God, where the sacred union takes place in response to God's word. So it's an exercise I invite you to participate in as we go to bed tonight.
May I comment on one thing?
Yes, please.
As we were entering the temple, my mind turned back to the diagram you gave us earlier about the temple.
Yes.
Somebody asked the question, where is north?
Yes.
It's winter and death.
Yes.
Bill can't say something. To say
absolutely
about that.
He does. Tell us, show us.
Those who sow in winter reap in summer. Winter symbolizes the world system.
Yes.
Even entering the first gate into the temple, we're leaving the world system. No wonder there was everything else outside right. Is winter.
Right.
That's right. So let us therefore sow in this world that we may reap in summertime.
Yes, and there's another text.
Great peace. Number three.
I can find it. I'll have to find it. There's another text that explicates this even further. But he speaks of winter, and I just caution us that winter also has a purpose. And we purposefully have been through winter. We purposefully have been through the world system. And what is the purpose of winter?
Rest, recharging.
It's absolutely necessary. It prepares us, prepares the earth for the cycle to come. And we have been there, and it's a necessary part of the journey. We don't denigrate winter. We give thanks for winter, even as we move into the spring, because we wouldn't know the spring without the winter.
Here, where we live, we need something like 120 hours of cold, below freezing weather for the peaches to bloom in the spring.
There you go.
It has to draw everything out of the tree, and it takes freezing weather. You don't get it, you don't get good peaches.
And it's true for us in the north with maple syrup.
Yes.
It's the winter, if you don't have a hard freeze, and then that spring that goes back and forth between the freeze and the beginning of thawing and going back to freezing, thawing, a gradual process, that was what draws out the sap and gets it flowing. And if you don't have that, you don't get it. It's all a part of the plan. It's all a part of the beauty. And we can enjoy it all.
My wife, we called for maple syrup a couple of weeks ago. She said, we don't have any. We're just starting sugaring.
Yeah.
She said, I'll send you maple syrup when we have it. Yeah.
Thank you all.